All right, so I'm Tara Smith. I'm an assistant professor at the University of Iowa, and I'm going to talk about some of our studies, which are kind of parallel to what Scott is doing in Canada. All right, so my disclosures, I have no relevant financial relationships, and our work right now is being funded by the National Pork Board. So why look at Iowa? Just a few factoids, I guess. Iowa is the number one pork-producing state in the United States. That figure is actually a little outdated. I just saw the 2008 figures, and we have about 19 million hogs at any time in the state, so compared to our human population of about 3 million. We do raise, right now, about 30% of the hogs raised in the United States, and it's at least a $4 billion a year industry, so it is pretty huge in Iowa. And since I work at a center looking at emerging infectious diseases and especially zoonotic diseases, which are transmitted between species, we decided basically just to go out and do some testing and see if we could find anything. So we started off looking about 2 years ago, and we looked at seven farms based in eastern Iowa and western Illinois. And these farms are all part of one closed confinement system. So this is one production system where animals move throughout these different farms. Some of them are nursery farms, some of them are sow farms, breeding farms, a different, you know, kind of combination of different types of farms within them. But collectively, it has about 60,000 animals present within the system at any one time. So it is one of the kind of factory farms, not one of the largest in the state, but a pretty big one. We took nasal swabs from 210 animals. One of them got contaminated on the way to the lab, so we ended up with 209 to culture. And we took 30 animals per age group, and we did a variety of ages, ranging from 9 to 24 weeks of age. So 24 weeks is right about the time they'll go off to slaughter. And then we also took samples from adult sows. So, you know, for this study, we really didn't know what we were going to get. We were very prepared for the possibility of a negative study, but it came back that we found MRSA in 70% of these animals, which is pretty astounding to us. So most of them, most of the younger animals were found to be colonized between 90 and 100% of the 9 to 15 week of age animals. And so this is several weeks. Usually these animals are weaned at about 3 weeks of age and then taken off to a nursery farm or a different types of farms. So this is still several weeks post-weaning, and we still had 100% prevalence in this age group. Reduced somewhat in the older animals, and so again, these are kind of the grower-finisher animals, and then again, getting ready to go off to slaughter here at 24 weeks, but still 50% prevalence. And then somewhat less in the sow group. About 36% of the sows were positive on this sampling. So we wanted to look, you know, to see if this was a complete fluke. We were able to sample at a smaller system then. This was also a bit newer confinement system that had about half the animals of the first one, about 27,000 animals in this particular production system. So for this, we collapsed some of the age groups rather than trying to do so many different age samples. We took three different groups at 11 weeks, at 20 weeks, and then again from adult sows, and took 30 samples again per age group. And these were all completely negative, didn't have any methicillin-resistant Staph aureus from this particular farm. So what we wanted to see, now that we knew, you know, the status of the farms as far as the animals, we wanted to go back and see if the humans were still present. So we obtained IRB approval and then went back about April of 2008, did some more sampling of the pigs at this time just to make sure that their status was the same, positive or negative, as our December and January sampling, and then also sampled 20 workers. So 14 of these were from the original production system, the larger one, and then six workers from the second production system. And we found that almost half of these were positive, 9 of 20. And all of those, again, were associated with the positive production system. So at that particular system, 64% of their workers and then 70% of the pigs were found to carry MRSA. So we wanted to do some typing. I'm trained mostly as a molecular microbiologist with some kind of epidemiology thrown in on top of there. So we wanted to see what strain type these were, and we were familiar with the background literature in this. So we were kind of expecting this, that all of these that we typed were ST398s and very closely related, and you can see the ones from humans, you know, look essentially identical to the ones from swine, again suggesting this interspecies transmission on the farm. So this was essentially just pilot data, and this was published in the journal PoS One in January of this year. So since then, we've expanded this and embarked on a multi-state study with collaborators from the University of Minnesota and from Ohio State University. And the collaborator at Ohio State is also doing some sampling not only in Ohio, but also in North Carolina, which is the second highest pig-producing state in the United States. So between us, we'll be sampling states that account for about 60% of all of the pig production in the U.S. So for each of us, we're sampling 18 different farms. We're dividing this up into kind of conventional confinement operations, factory-type farms, and also 9 antibiotic-free and or organic farms. So they all have to be antibiotic-free. Some will be additionally organic on top of that. So we're testing 24 animals per farm, and based on our pilot data, we decided to try to maximize the probability of finding MRSA on these farms. So we're looking at younger animals, typically age 9 to 12 weeks. And then we're also doing nasal and pharyngeal samples from humans on these farms. And we've finished 17 of these farms to date. So far, we haven't found any MRSA on the antibiotic-free farms. We've finished up our testing here in Iowa of 9 of these farms, and all of them have been negative for MRSA. For our confinements, half of them have been positive. So 4 out of the 8 that we've tested so far, and we still have 1 more to finish. The overall prevalence in swine has been 11%, so 45 animals out of 408 of those tested. And again, all of those have been on confinements. So when you look at that subsection of pigs that have been sampled, 24% of the pigs that we've investigated on these confinement farms have been positive. Humans then, we've sampled 86 of them so far, working in close contact with pigs. Overall, 31% of those have been positive, but again, when you break that down just by looking at confinement workers, 44% have been positive. So actually higher prevalence in humans right now than what we're seeing in our pigs. So our conclusions for this have been that individuals exposed to swine, and especially those in confinement operations, are at risk for MRSA carriage. And because I work on the human public health side, that's my biggest interest. But we are also doing some studies looking at potential MRSA infections in the pigs as well with some of our veterinary colleagues. So what we've looked at, we started off looking just at basic prevalence, and now we've kind of expanded that into looking more at the ecology and also the environment in these different farms. So we've looked particularly at confinements as amplifiers of these infections. So in these facilities, you have thousands of animals in a relatively small space, and you have these very powerful ventilation systems that have been built in order to vent some of the gases that build up from the pig waste that's present in there. So they're good at venting out these gases, but what they also are able to do is to spread these different bacteria throughout the facility. So we initially did some very low-tech environmental sampling. We have some selective plates that we use for our MRSA studies, and we simply left some of them out in these facilities open to the air so that any bacteria that are circulating in the air could just settle on these plates. And we left them out in 10 different areas within this production system A that we knew that had been repeatedly positive. And we found that all but one of them grew MRSA. So this is, again, not using any kind of vacuum sampling, just leaving them open to the air. And this included a plate that we put in one area of the facility that had been emptied of animals, that had been cleaned out, power washed, and still MRSA was present in the air to give us a positive sample in that room. So we initially did, from this kind of low tech, we went a little bit higher tech and used an Anderson impactor sampler. This is a 6-stage Anderson sampler, but for this pilot work, we just used 2 stages to look at respirable bacteria, those that are able to be taken more deeply into the lungs and are associated with smaller particle sizes, and non-respirable bacteria, so those that will get stuck in the nose and throat and won't be able to be breathed deeply. So we did some sampling again within the barns themselves and then also outside and downwind of the barns. Inside, we found that MRSA, again, was present in both the respirable and the non-respirable portions of the air, so this means that it could be breathed deep into the lungs. And we did a little bit of quantitation, and for these, we averaged about 700 colony-forming units per cubic meter of air. So this is, you know, a good amount of bacteria to be exposed to throughout the day. We did not find these that traveled more than 25 meters downwind. But again, this was just a pilot study, and we're going to be doing some more of these in the coming months. I just want to give you an idea of kind of what this looks like on our plates. So this is just one example from this. And these are plates that they have a particular chemical in them so that when MRSA is present, it will turn a pink color. And then we confirm these with testing. But so these circled are some of the MRSA colonies, and it's not the greatest picture. But what you can see is that there's all these other bacteria on there that are able to grow in the presence of this antibiotic also. So some of them are truly methicillin resistant in that they carry the particular MECA gene. Some of them just are phenotypically resistant. They don't carry that gene. But you can see that there's, you know, a whole lot of other different bacterial species, and some of them you can distinguish by phenotype. Some of them are kind of a teal blue with large colonies or small colonies or dark blue. And most of these are different species of coagulase-negative staphylococci that most people don't pay a lot of attention to because they don't cause a lot of disease. But they do provide a potential reservoir for these antibiotic-resistant genes. So we're starting to move. And we'd like to look a little bit more at the ecology of this also, rather than just, you know, zoom in on MRSA, but look at kind of the other players that are involved on the farm. And so one thing we can think of is that, you know, MRSA is kind of the needle in the haystack, and we're finding that a lot. But that doesn't mean that the haystack is made of needles. So there's not only MRSA present in, you know, the nose or the environment, there's all of these other organisms also that are you know, playing a role perhaps in the maintenance and spread of these resistance genes. So we've also done some other environmental sampling on these farms. This is done by a graduate student that works with us, and she's sampled the shower facilities on these farms. So a lot of these will be shower in, shower out, to provide kind of the highest level of biosecurity on the farms. And so she looked at especially areas that are high touch in these different shower facilities, so doorknobs, faucet handles, and just swab them for MRSA. And we're finding that we can, you know, find a lot of this even within the shower facilities. So even if you're not exposed within the farm, you could potentially even pick it up in the shower while you're leaving. So that provides, you know, a big challenge in controlling this on the farm. This isn't like in the hospital or in some athletic facilities where you can just increase hand washing or something and you know, eliminate that or at least reduce it. Here we need to really have a different paradigm to try to prevent spread of this. So in addition to looking at the farm, we also have done a pilot study looking at meat. And this we focused just on Iowa, and it was very much a convenient sample, so that anytime I had a talk or a sampling somewhere around the state, you know, I'd take a big cooler with me and fill it up with meat on the way back. And sampling from, you know, usually about three different grocery stores per town, and just any retail available meat. So we sampled mostly beef, pork, chicken, and turkey. We've also had a few small samples of venison and buffalo and some of the other meats that are available. So we swabbed all of them for Staph aureus. And in contrast to what they've seen in the Netherlands and in Canada, we found a pretty low MRSA prevalence, only 1.1%. So we found two separate isolates. Both of them were from pork. One of them was from ground pork, and one of them was from a pork chop. And one of these was the ST398 strain. The other one was actually the USA 300 strain. So that's the common community-associated one that we've seen in the United States. But about 15% were positive for some kind of Staph aureus that is resistant to antibiotics. So a lot of clindamycin and erythromycin resistance in these, but not necessarily methicillin resistance. So in summary, we have found that MRSA is certainly present in U.S. swine and swine workers, especially in these confinement facilities. So far, we have not found it on any of the antibiotic-free facilities here. And we are concerned about its potential to spread to the larger community, and also about these different staph species, not only Staph aureus, but other coagulase-negative staph that could serve as reservoirs of resistance, and then spread that again via humans or potentially via meat products. So some of our future and current directions really are we're doing a more general study of MRSA in rural Iowa to look at especially the molecular subtypes. So are most people in Iowa colonized with this USA 300, USA 100 strains? How often do we see something like ST398 in people that don't have direct farming contact but maybe live in an area with high farming density? We're also looking, working with rural physicians to try to institute some of these surveillance studies so we can see how common these types of infections are, because as Scott mentioned, you just don't get a lot of, you know, abscesses and minor skin infections screened. We have done some surveys of workers, both our questionnaire data that we give when we go out sampling and another survey that a graduate student has done, which gives us some anecdotal evidence that farmers do feel they're getting MRSA infections, but we just don't know how common they are really and if they're actually caused by these types that are on the farm. We're also planning to expand this to animals other than swine. And, you know, hopefully get some more data on the role of antibiotics. Obviously, that's the big factor that jumps up that is different between these antibiotic-free and the confinement farms, but there's a lot of other things that play a role also. You know, just simply the density of animals on these farms makes transmission more likely on the confinements. If MRSA is present, confinement operations also tend to import a lot more swine, whereas on the antibiotic-free farms, these tend to be animals that have lived on the farms for many years. You don't get a lot of new animals coming in that could potentially be bringing this infection in with them. And also, in addition to you know, antibiotics that may be used to treat as preventatives or in the feed, there are also other things that may be present, such as the presence of metals in these different feeds that may be driving resistance also, in addition to antibiotics. So there's a lot of other things to look at than just strictly antibiotic use. And then we're very interested in secondary transmission. So is this getting from workers into their close contacts, such as, you know, family that they live with? Is it spreading out to community members? And these things we don't have a handle on. So that's some things we'd like to look at. And these are some of the staff, mostly grad students, and then my collaborators at the University Hospital and in the Department of Occupational and Environmental Health at the University of Iowa. And I will take questions later.